Hello there, it's Jimmy Caron, and I just wanted to say hello to the East Coast Horror Group. I've been in Chicago for 3 days with the Day of the Dead, and it has been a great time, except I had to sit next to Tommy Matthews of Return of the Living Dead, and that's awful. But otherwise, it was a wonderful time, and you people are great here in Chicago, and we thank you for the hospitality.
Otherworldlyculture.com.
They're here.
Alive. It's alive. It's alive.
Otherworldlyculture.com presents Dead On Movie Reviews.
Salutations and mutilations. You're listening to Otherworldly Culture Presents Dead On Movie Reviews. Tonight, we will present horror movie reviews and lively debate here on otherworldlyculture.com and on future select Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can join our live chat at that time by clicking on Live Shows, the link right on the homepage of otherworldlyculture.com. I'm your host, Tim Kretschmann, coming to you from the east coast of Lake Michigan. It's my honor to introduce the Faculty of Fear panel presenting tonight's lectures. First, we have Danielle. She has had her first on-screen role as Mary Jane in a multinational Spider-Man fan film. Shortly after an obsession was sparked for being in front of the camera, she has done several professional modeling shoots as well as a collection of musical theater shows. And, of course, she has been starring in a number of horror movies with her considerable talents are now moving toward direction as well. Back for another appearance here on Dead On, one of our favorites, Danielle McKay. Hello, Danielle.
Hello. How's it going, all?
Fantastic. It's so good to hear from you again. It's been a little while. We took a break over the summer, and it's good to get back in the groove, back to school here at Dead On Movie Reviews. And next, we have the man they call the Face of Jace. He's a sincere zombie apologist. It's the man of two voices. Wait. I almost forgot his theme music. Oh, my.
I don't have theme music.
There it is. No, that's not it. There it is. Okay. So, Mike, we actually have a student body that really is a student body. He's our dean of students, Coach Michael Exler.
Hi, Tim. And why did James Caron give us the longest, most awkward bumper ever?
Well, it's not like we can get it re-recorded.
No. Yeah. It's true.
So, hey, actually, he was being a good guy, you know, but we didn't coach him enough. You know who I blame for that, so we'll just leave it alone. All right, everybody. We have a great show lined up for today. And we, as always, are going to start with our guest, who has a movie that we've, I believe, have talked about here on the show before. It is streaming currently at a number of locations. You can check it out at a lot of different venues. Danielle, what have you been watching?
I have been watching Lost Boys, The Tribe.
All right, Lost Boys, The Tribe, coming from 2008, which is about 300 years ago. So, Lost Boys, The Tribe, what made you check this movie out?
It's been a few years since I watched either of the sequels, and I remember this one being pretty good as a standalone movie, not as a follow-up, but I wanted to check it out again and see if my opinion still held.
I have a very unpopular opinion about Lost Boys. I think the original movie is just okay. I think it's just so iconic of the 80s, it's taken on a life of its own. But as a horror movie, as a vampire movie, I just think it's okay. I'm not sure anybody ever agrees with me on that, but that's where I stand.
I mean, it's my number one favorite movie, so you're
is
wrong.
It really? But all right. Awesome. Awesome. We get an argument right away. Fantastic. Well, tell me about The Tribe.
So The Tribe is a follow-up movie, but it's not a sequel to the original Lost Boys. It doesn't follow any of the same story or characters, though the main vampire is actually Kiefer Sutherland's little brother. So that's an interesting fact.
Interesting.
Which was pretty cool. Keep the vampires in the family. Sure. And this does kind of follow a similar plot in the sense of these two older teenagers move from out of town to a city that's crawling with vampires. Move in with another relative who kind of takes care of them. And they get caught up with the wrong crowd, so to speak.
No.
Well, that happens sometimes when you move to a new place. If I was going to be in a horror movie, I would stay put. I would never move into a new house.
Good thinking.
Yeah, well, I think...
Is anybody from the original film in this one?
Corey Feldman is.
Oh, nice.
Which, in this one, it's not quite a Corey Feldman fan film, but in the third one, in The Thirst, it's definitely a Corey Feldman fan film.
I can see why you would want to make a fan film with him.
Are you a big fan?
No.
Mike, I think you've been on stage near him when he was being interviewed. I don't remember. Did you get to ask any questions? Well, I was there, or was he one of them that was taking him from the...
No, I actually interviewed him twice, and they were both like 50-minute interviews, just me and him and his angels. He had angels on stage with them both times.
And how did that go?
Something messed that kid up at a very early age. straight up. He was just broke from the start, man. I kind of feel bad for him, to be honest for you, because I don't know.
I've heard his autobiography is it indicates what it is that messed
him up.
Yeah,
it definitely does.
Yeah, he was he was used for things at a very young age. We'll just leave it at that.
So yeah, he definitely liked talking about his career. Like, you could tell, like, there were some things in his childhood that just kind of shook fear in him and whatnot. But I don't know. Now he's just kind of a despicable person. But I mean, I think he was made that way from the beginning, and he was never told no. So,
yeah. And he had been acting since the age of 4. So, I mean, anyone that's in the, we've seen from a lot of celebrities that anyone that's in the industry starting that young goes crazy.
Oh, for sure. So he's never really lived reality. So, he's just, I don't know.
You want to hear something really weird, and you may not even know who this actor was, but there was a Disney star called Moochie that was in, like, the Shaggy Dog and a bunch of Disney stuff. And when I first saw Lost Boys, I think I had just got Disney Channel on cable, because that was back when they still showed movies on the Disney Channel, not just tween stuff all day long. And I was binging all these, you know, 1960s, 1970 movies, because Disney was making a ton of movies just for TV. and a lot of them had Moochie in them. And if you ever see a picture of Moochie and Corey Feldman next to each other at a certain age, they looked almost exactly the same. For the longest time, I thought he was like a physically stunted, like 50-year-old in the 80s walking around. And I just,
Moochie.
You never saw Moochie. Okay.
No.
I will find a photo. It's uncanny.
Is it a person or a character?
It's a person that looks exactly like Corey Feldman at a young age.
I'm looking him up.
His name was Kevin Corcoran, was his name. Oh, I'll throw a picture up on the screen. I think he looks exactly the same. Some folks tell me I'm full of it, but that's not unusual. I'm used to that. Okay, I got a photo coming up in 3, 2, here we go. Let's look at that. Looks just, well, see, obviously, Corey's quite a bit older in the pictures I'm showing up there right now. But as a young kid, I just thought this was the same person.
We'll disagree with that one. Wooly will disagree with that one as well, Tim.
I thought it was the same person. So sad.
Yeah, they look a lot alike with one eye closed and then the second eye closed.
Exactly the same is the word.
If I had a bunch of concussions, it would not match for sure, dude. But
I nailed that one.
It was a good job.
Whatever you think.
Okay, sorry. Go on with Lost Boys, the Tribe. Now, how did they shoehorn Corey Feldman into this?
Corey Feldman, his character, I'm sorry, there is actually a character that's the same. He is still his Edgar Frog character. Surfboard Shaper and Vampire Hunter.
Oh. He's a hyphenate. I thought they ran a comic book store in the original.
Their parents owned the comic book store, and actually in the first one, because I watched the first one just a couple nights ago, too, and I've seen it so many times I could quote the whole thing, but in the first one, they actually say this when they introduce themselves as vampire hunters. They throw out there that they're surfboard shapers as well, which is random, but it's in there.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
That's how he got roped into this one. All of the vampires are surfing vampires, so. They nice. Ride motorcycles and surf waves.
At
my
night.
Type of vampires.
Makes sense.
I would think surfing at night would be, like, almost impossible. Because you can't.
As vampires or just in general?
In general. That sounds super dangerous. There's no light at all out there.
I mean, I agree.
Well, finally.
But they're bats, so they have, like, night vision, right?
And they're wearing sunglasses all the time if they're part of this franchise.
That was actually a joke made in this one as well. It was about if they had night vision, and they said that's a myth. And they said they're bats anyways. Bats don't use echolocation. Or they use echolocation, not night vision.
It's true.
So they just keep playing G Tom Mac at loud volume on a boombox. Exactly.
That fucking guy.
I was baiting you, Mike.
Stop.
Okay. Who is the main star? Looks familiar when we go through the pictures.
You know, I'm not exactly sure who he is. I've seen him in several things.
Yeah, I'm going on a search on that. You keep going. I'm on the job here.
All right.
That guy, I just keep seeing it. I'm like, he looks familiar.
Oh, his name is Tad Helgenbrink. Yeah, but I thought this movie was actually very successful. It did something a little differently and better than the first one did. in the sense that the vampires are, their sense of persuasion is a lot better.
Okay.
They, in the first one, they tried to do that whole sexy vampires reel you in type of thing. And then once you're there, you see what they truly are. This one did that a lot more successfully. They made it look cool and you did want to be one of them. And it did draw you in as an audience more than the original did.
Did they have a noodle scene?
And the first, how could you say no to noodles?
Well, they do have, noodles, oh, who is in the first one? The father vampire. What was his name? He was on Gilmore Girls later on.
Yeah, it was Edward Howard or something like that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
That's going to kill me. That's going to kill me. Now, I didn't
Herman or something.
Yeah, Edward Herman.
Herman, yeah, that's it. Now, I didn't find anything that I think I know Ted Hilgenbrink or whatever his name is on his list, except for he did a bunch of, like, American Pie, like the fourth movie and Epic movie and stuff like that. So maybe I recognized him from something like that. But Autumn Reeser, who is which one of the like the lead lady, it looks like. She's done so much television. I think I've watched all of these TV shows. I'm like, yeah, I used to watch that one.
MacGyver on there.
MacGyver? No, MacGyver's not on the list, surprisingly.
Okay.
But weird. She's been, I mean, I'm just going through here. It's TV, 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 TV. Down the list. And I think the one I remember her from, I'm not seeing on the list, with Andrew Branagh. This is going to drive me crazy. I'm going to go down the wormhole later. I'll go later and go down the wormhole. But I'm certain I recognize her from something. Or maybe it was No Ordinary Family. Anyway, she's it looks like a good solid cast of working actors here. Not, you know, ham sandwich.
Yeah, it was solid. I really don't have any complaints about it. It is, like I said, it's more of a follow-up versus a sequel, because there was never a sequel needed, and if they had tried to make a sequel, then I feel like it would have ruined the original. It was a solid standalone movie, and I'm a big fan.
Yeah, a sequel would have required Kiefer, right? Somehow they would have had to brought Kiefer back somehow, and that would just have sucked.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
I 100% agree.
Who is the older brother of Corey Haim? It was like Jason Patrick or something?
Yeah.
Played him?
Yeah, that's him.
Wasn't he like in Speed 2 or something?
Sure was.
Yeah. Yeah, he could have been chased by a cruise ship. That would have been awesome. That would have been
stupid.
Awesome.
Oh, so bad.
Oh, come on. One of my faves, man.
Stop. Are you serious?
No. Really? Oh, no.
I was going to say, I'm just going to hang up. Right,
I don't hate it as much as a lot of people, but no, it's not good. Yes, No Ordinary Family. That is what she was on. Nailed it. Oh,
what is that?
Yes. That was in 2011 when superheroes were first becoming hot. And they made a movie with the guy from The Shield, Michael Chiklis, and the wife of the Crypt Keeper, Julie Benz, was in that show. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. It was basically this American family that just happened to have superpowers. And it was kind of a comedy, I guess, but it wasn't real super funny. It didn't know what it wanted to do with itself, was the problem. But I remember she was real cute on it, so I was like, ooh, I'll keep watching this. And I like Michael Chiklis. I like Julie Benz. So I watched, I think I saw every episode they put out, but it was sometimes grueling.
A show of your dreams.
Yeah, exactly.
The fuck do you remember that from that long ago?
I don't challenge me to trivia. That's all I say. You know, if it's phones down, I do pretty good. But I couldn't remember Mucci's name, Kevin Kerkorian. Jeez, I can't believe it. But
now he's the only one that remembers his name ever.
No, this is a well-known fact of all of us really old dudes. We get together and we talk about old things. like going to see Paul Anka live or something. So anyway.
Paul Anka, holy fuck.
I am going to throw so many old references into today's show. You will think that Engelbert Humperdinck had come by and sang to you personally. You'll be hearing so much beautiful music
out of me. It's different than any other night.
Okay, so Lost Boys, I'm guessing was made direct for video or probably.
Yeah.
2008 was it streaming yet? Was there streaming in 2008? It was probably before that.
I think there was Netflix streaming, but it was just at the starting.
So it was probably for Blockbuster, eh? Get on the Blockbuster things. But,
yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. But some of those were good. I used to like a lot of those movies, so this might be one worth checking out.
This one was solid. Angus Sutherland is definitely a different type of head vampire, but I think it works really well. And there are a lot of the same jokes in this one as there are as the first one, but they don't feel forced. It feels like they all work really well with where they're at.
All right. Fantastic. So are you ready to score?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I press this button. There it comes. All right. So what do you score? Lost Boys, The Tribe.
I would give it an A-.
A-? Solid.
It is very solid.
Wow.
Yeah. The only thing that I would deduct points for is that it was made in 2008, and everything in it could have been made in probably 2000. And so that was a pretty big difference, pretty big difference in time there.
Yeah. And the Lost Boys sequels came way later than they should have.
Yeah.
In my opinion. It was like... Yeah, wow.
It's funny they never capitalized on that, and I never understood that.
From what I hear, they're thinking about it now. It's gone back and forth for several years, but the CW, I think, just got rights to make Lost Girls a show, which is always what, was it Joel Schumacher who originally directed it?
Yes, it was Joel Schumacher before he got into Batman. Don't get Mike started.
The only idea he ever had for a sequel was following women, and the network said no, but that was the only follow-up that he wanted a sequel where it was The Lost Girls.
It is interesting with today and Netflix and all the Amazon shows and stuff. I would not be shocked to see him do a show here, because what was it? The Vampire Diaries went for forever, and some of this other stuff on the CW. So,
yeah, I'm not a fan of the idea though, so let's not encourage that.
I am 100% not a fan of the fucking network that's doing it. Everything they make is shit.
I agree.
100% teen melodrama garbage. I hate that network so much.
Supernatural was great for a while, and about season 5 or 6.
Wait a minute. Wait. Are you both telling me you did not watch Heart of Dixie? Is that what you're trying
That's
to?
That's what I'm telling you.
Are you trying to tell me that? Wait.
You can name any show on the CW, just name it, and I can guarantee you I've never watched it just because it's on the CW.
I'll admit,
I've never seen snippets of it. It just, ugh.
I'll admit, I like the Arrowverse stuff. I like the Arrowverse.
I can't do it. I'm really? A DC guy, and it's like, oh, what is this trash? Yep.
Arrow is DC.
I know. Oh, I'm a DC guy, and it makes me sad what they're doing to it.
What is Gotham on? Is Gotham CW?
No, that was Fox. They canceled it.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't cancel it. They ended it, which I thank them for at least ending this fucking show rather than not.
Right. A lot
to. But see, it was a solid show.
I was a fan of Gotham.
I liked Arrow and Flash, but I always thought the TV shows were better than the movies that DC's been putting out, because I don't like the movies.
They just add that melodrama that does not belong.
I'll agree with that. They go it into everything becomes everything becomes an analogy for high school.
God, not everything. Damn it. Stop.
Okay, we're going to go to Mike before I get him too worked up. I might get him a little more worked up as we go. Mike, you are watching something that was streaming. So tell me what it is you've been watching.
Watch season 2 of Mindhunters. It's on Netflix. I don't know. Has everybody seen the first season?
I have not.
Yes.
I have it in my queue, and for some reason other stuff has beat it out. And from what you're telling me, I should be moving it up to queue.
And Danielle, have you seen it?
I have. I've not seen the second season yet. I've seen about half of episode 1, but the first season is great. You absolutely should watch it.
No doubts. I promise this is a spoiler-free review because everybody needs to see this fucking show 110%.
Mindhunter is about profilers, right? That's the basic story?
Basic story is one guy comes up with a concept in the FBI, and they create the behavioral science unit.
Okay.
And that is the start of profiling. And the first season's a lot about them starting the program and interviewing some of the bigger names, of serial killing at the time.
Right.
And so that's what that focuses on. So we're on season 2. Now, the arc of this season is very much on the three main members of this psychological behavioral units, whatever. So it's a lot about them. There are some serial killers in it, but it sort of twists to a story. And it's right in the synopsis, so this is not a spoiler. And Danielle, I don't know if you know about this, but it was about a series of killings in Atlanta, Georgia from 1979 to 1981.
Oh, yeah.
It was 28 young African-American males were killed in the city of Atlanta.
Holy cow.
That actually became a real issue because at the time there was a radio station that each time one of these murders would get reported, they would play Another One Bites the Dust.
Oh, my God.
What was the year?
That's America's craziest shit ever.
What year?
79 to 81.
Holy shit. Wow.
This is I didn't know about this, at all. So to see this, I watched this in stages because they're hour episodes and there's 9 episodes in this. And I looked it up and I was absolutely disgusted at what I was fucking reading of the Atlanta politicians and the police department. And I don't even know if they should be called a police department. But it got to a point where the main character of, this is not a character, he's an actual guy, of the show, he pushed so hard and said that we need to, go and try to help these people in Atlanta from losing their babies. It's, at this point it was at 8. They finally came in at 15 and they sent the behavioral science unit down and to try to work with police. And that's the main premise of the whole thing. So you get to find out the loveliness of corporate, or I should say politics over justice mm-hmm. is a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. It's a brutal reminder. I can't even stress how much politics is the worst thing that we could have ever invented.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, is Charles Manson in this season?
He is. He is. They do throughout the film, or throughout the series, I should say. They do have some serial killer interviews. They're few and far between in this season, I will say that, which I understand because they're trying to get this other story across and they're trying to, you know, because they were part of it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping it gets kind of back to that in series or season three. The Manson part, one of the best scenes in television history. I'm talking over Game of Thrones. I'm talking wow. over it all, man. And I'm a Game of Thrones fan. Like,
oh yeah, you like dragons.
I do love them. This show's writing is as close to perfection for me as possible.
I would agree.
Wow.
The painstaking way they go about just setting a scene up, everything is meticulous down to the last detail of the era. It's impressive because it's all filmed around Pittsburgh. So I'm watching it on TV and I'm like, holy fuck, they turned that street that I know into 1978. Like, how do you know? It's crazy that they, yeah. you know, I know they do that all the time and everything, but those people don't get enough credit because it's damn. Really showed in this.
It is tough to move back in time like these guys do. I had a history professor that once told me that don't read books, watch movies for history. Because, yeah, they make mistakes and they put out, you know, Starbucks cups every so often. But if you really want to feel history, you got to watch it on TV or watch movies of that era, and you'll get a better feel for what the history is. What I'm finding fascinating is you're saying 1981, because 81 was when I first became aware there was a behavioral science unit or whatever they call it. I know on Criminal Minds they call it the behavioral analysis unit. But in 1980, there was a TV show that starred David Soul, if I remember correctly. It was called Unsub, which is short for Unknown Subject. Mm-hmm. And in that show, they had a profiler. And that was the first I ever heard of that. And then I think shortly after that, Michael Mann came out with Manhunter. And I saw that movie. And I didn't know anything that there was such a thing as a profiler before those two things. And you're saying that's concurrent with the time frame of this movie. Or this TV show, I should say.
Yeah, they were doing this about, I'd say, a good 2 years before this started happening. So,
wow.
77. They probably started 76, 77.
It sounds the first season, what year exactly it was, but right around that time. I don't remember.
So it really hasn't been around all that long.
No, and I reviewed the first season on the show.
Oh, I remember. And it was a rave. You were kissing your ass.
Because it's amazing. But I was like, I can't believe that we were into the almost 1980s. And this wasn't even a blip on our fucking radar.
Yeah.
It's like, how scary is that, man? We were just sending these guys to the fucking chair without getting any knowledge from them. That's just crazy to me. Like,
I'm trying to remember Gene was definitely before 77, but what about John Wayne Gacy? He would have been... You would have been about
I don't
that
know.
Time.
Gacy was about the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the overarching story of the first one is BTK.
Okay. Yeah, that would have been...
That's...
Okay, that sounds fine.
Right. They always kind of just talk about him because he's still on the loose, basically. And they keep with that story arc with this one. And it's just really cool how they do it. I mean, they just do it so well. Just by the way it's shot, in my notes, I have the music. The music just never puts you at ease. It could be a shot of driving down like a suburban street, and it has this music going, and then it just comes with this sharp cutting note that just jars you out of any like comfort that you were in. And it does that throughout, and it does it so effectively, and they do it at the exact right places. It's perfection. It's as close as perfection as you can get. But on the musical end.
I may dive into this tonight. Do I need to catch up on season one before I watch season two?
No, they do a nice little recap on the first episode. And there's not really much that's connected from the first two, except for the relationship between the three.
Right.
The two guys and the lady. So.
Okay, perfect.
All right. I think I'm going to know the answer before I ask you. So I'm going to start typing here. What grade are you going to give this one?
I'm giving this one an A+. It's amazing. Please watch it. And I did my best to not spoil anything.
You actually did a good job at that, because I feel like you didn't give away a plot point or anything for me.
No, like I said, I want everybody to see this fresh and enjoy it, because it's great.
Well, it's definitely gonna go on my queue. Fantastic. Well, the I guess we'll go into my movie. The movie that I'm going to be talking about comes from our good friends once again on streaming. You can find this all over the place. I also took a TV series, but I took the entire run since it's all out there at this point. I picked From Dusk Till Dawn seasons 1 through 3. Because a lot of people always wonder, hey, what's the scoop with this? From Dusk Till Dawn is 3 10-episode seasons. They aired from 2014 to 2016. The first season...
Johnson's in it.
Yes, Don Johnson is in there. Oh, I'll get into the cast. Don't you worry, buddy.
Don Johnson.
What?
I don't know. I'm just fucking with
you. Oh, okay. the first season is kind of a remake of the movie that Robert Rodriguez. This was made for the El Rey Network, which I believe he helped found. And it was made to be like a Hispanic American type of cable outlet. And this was one of their original shows on there. And let me tell you, high quality program. The quick synopsis of it is: a Texas Ranger is in hot pursuit of the infamous Gecko Brothers and their hostages. They all end up trapped in a desert bar secretly run by vampires and discover a vampire conspiracy. That's a very good, quick and dirty description of the show. It has a lot of good acting in the show. The effects are very good. The story moves along quickly. There's a lot of action. But here's what's weird. Each season almost has its own kind of standalone story with the same characters, but it kind of has a beginning, middle, and end, and a beginning, middle, and end. And I found the seasons very uneven. The first season was really good. Fantastic season of television. Really enjoyed it. The second season, I'm pretty close to not liking. It was just like extremely mediocre, as I like to say. It was just ugh. And there were entire episodes where I was like, why am I watching this? The third season was almost as good as the first season. So it really ran the gambit. In the cast, the two leads were DJ Catrona and Zane Holtz. I really don't know what else they've been in of note. And then the woman that took the Salma Hayek role, which you can't help when you're watching this show, because of the movie being so iconic, you typically go, oh, that's the Quentin Tarantino character, or that's this character. That still happens in here. But her name is Yaiza Gonzalez, and she does a fantastic job. Madison Davenport is like the daughter of the preacher. He does a great job. Brandon Suhu is the son. He is a great little actor. And then we get to some of the actors that you've heard of before. Jake Busey plays the Tom Savini role of Sex Machine in the TV series. And he, early on, he's just doing the creepy side that, you know, that Busey can do. And he becomes more of a comical character as the seasons progress. That's good. Wilmer Valderrama, who you know from the 70s show. He's currently, I think, on like CSI or something. He plays kind of a smarmy... I don't know that he was ever like the lead villain, but he was kind of the heavy for a lot of it. He did a great job. You wouldn't know that he was known for comedy early on in his career. Robert Patrick plays the Harvey Keitel role of the pastor that he has the kids that come along. And then in season two, they introduce Izai Morales, who I don't know if I'm pronouncing his first name right, but you have seen him on a ton of TV shows. And then they got Brianna Evigan on, who is a true scream queen. She's done a lot of horror stuff. And she was all over it. Danny Trejo was in season two. I think they totally misused him. Don Johnson was in the first couple of episodes playing Nash Bridges. No, he was doing real Texas Ranger type stuff. And I think he did a great job when he was on. Tom Savini joins the cast in season three. There were some of the most crazy action scenes in the first season, but by the third season, the action sequences are just bonkers. And I'll say this, the first season seemed more like an action movie. By the second season, it's just kind of a mess. The third, it's kind of like a heist season or something in that second season. It doesn't know what it wants to do. It kind of wanders around in the wilderness. The third season actually has some scary parts to it. It's actually frightening, which I think is really hard in episodic television. The only shows that I really say, okay, they scared me on television, most of the time, it's, you know, stuff like The Twilight Zone or X-Files, or, you know, they're kind of standalone stories. Because, and Mike, you know, I say this all the time, I think horror works better the shorter it is, the more compressed it is. And here, I was in hour 22 of watching this show, and I'm like, damn, that actually had me on the edge of my seat. And part of it is, by the time you get to the third season, you have demonic possessions and stuff going on. And that stuff kind of creeps me out. But I think they also found a tone for the show. Yes, there is some, you know, back and forth and, you know, kind of snarky commentary between the Gecko brothers. But there's an awful lot of tension going on as well. which it's just a really fun program to watch. I will say some of the effects, when they did some CGI effects that were in season three, I became sad because up until then, the CSI, the CGI, effects, were primarily like blood splatter type of things, which it was fine. But by the third season, they're doing some creatures and things, and they didn't really work. But the makeup effects are good. I'm sorry?
Did Tom Savini do the special effects in this as well?
I don't think so. In fact, I think it was Nicotero, or how do you say his name?
Nicotero.
Yeah, Nicotero. I think it was him because there was like a high school named like Nicotero or... No, it wasn't a high school. It was a mental hospital was named that. And I went, oh, okay. But I don't think Savini, he might have done one or two of the things. Actually, Tom Savini, when he was on screen, he was a lot of the comedy relief for season three. Oh, and I see now the screenshot of Jeff Fahey was in the second season, and I kind of think that's why I didn't like the second season. I was not a fan of his character. I've never been a real big Jeff Fahey fan, but I don't know. The second season was just kind of a mess. So, if you are looking on your Netflix, on Amazon, whatever it is, I would suggest that you do the following. Watch season one, skip season two, watch season three. And you might go, but Tim, I'll have missed 10 hours of plot development. To that, I'll say, you're welcome, because I think you could go from one to three, and there's a few things that developed over those two. None of it's important. None of it. None of it. You'll figure it out. You'll figure it out. Because, you know, one or two characters die and become vampires. Big deal. You know, the ones that have fangs, they're the vampires. Got it? Got it? Good. It really isn't that difficult to figure out. So, I thought it was a great show. I would really recommend it, but I would only recommend seasons one and season three. So, I had a hard time. What am I going to give this? Because I can't give it an A+ like Mike there, because it is so uneven. So what I decided to do with this is I'm going to give each season its own grade. So season one, I'm going to say season one was like an A-. Pretty dang solid, pretty good. By season two, that would be a C-. And season three, I would give a B+, just a little bit behind season one. So that's where I stand on it. I am 100% correct. You can just disagree at your own wish, but you would be wrong, just so you know. So, yeah, if you get a chance, this is not as strong a recommendation as Mike gave for his show, but it's certainly, you know, worth just kind of like a little look or two and enjoy the program. All right. Well, we are at the end of the show, and we do have something special to discuss. I'm going to turn things over to Mike for an announcement he needs to make.
Oh, thanks. Many of you know Sid Haig passed away last Saturday. Our future, our prior venture, East Coast Horror Group, we spent a lot of time with Sid throughout almost 8 years that we were with Days of the Dead. And I knew for a while that he was sick. That he was battling some things, and the progression that he went through was heartbreaking, to see
you know, such a strong man go from what he was to his final days. But he was key to what East Coast Horror Group was. He was a big part of what we did at Days of the Dead with the panels. We had, Tim and I were discussing, I think it was 27 total panels.
Wow.
Or interviews, I should say, including when he was on the radio show with us. So it was about 27 times over seven, almost 8 years. So it was something that you knew was coming, but still doesn't make it any easier. But we wanted to say, you know, definitely condolences to the family, and definitely we will definitely miss Sid Haig, and we definitely lost one in a million for sure. So rest in peace.
And as you know, Sid Haig, he was at so many different conventions, and if you didn't get the opportunity to meet him, you really missed one of the classics out there. So, all right, well, we're going to close things out with anything we need to plug. Let's go to the website here at otherworldlyculture.com. And Adam, you'll notice, wasn't on tonight's show. He just came back from Walt Disney World. And among other things, he tells us about Smuggler's Run at Disney World. And that was very interesting on there. I should mention, too, that Otherworldly Culture is now available on Apple Podcasts and in iTunes. You can just click this link that we just put into the right-hand column, and it'll take you directly there if you don't know how to get there. I have launched a new show called Box Office Biggies. We did 1950. We are doing 1951 tomorrow night. It's a Facebook Live show where I'll be taking the year 1951 and going through the top movies box office wise of that year, and also discussing, and this is probably the more interesting part of the show, which movies were not top box office that year. And a lot of times you don't know the movies that were the top box office, but boy, there's some classics down lower in the list. And I'll tell you, the top movie in 1951, I've never seen it, which is very, very unusual for me. I see a lot of movies.
You're slacking.
Yeah, well, I was young at that point. But unbelievable.
Young and spry.
Yeah. And I also put out an article about my history with MoviePass, which is just cathartic for me. And Mike has started a new show called Into the Green. You want to talk about that, Mike?
Yeah, Into the Green, the first one, is out there for you to check out. That's the Terpometer. Check that out. It's a smoking device. And Into the Green is going to be about my journey with medical marijuana here in the states of Pennsylvania.
All right. Danielle, what have you been up to? You've been up to a lot of stuff, so I need a full update.
Yeah, so I just launched the Instagram page for my new production company. It's called Fika Motion Pictures, F-I-K-A. So check us out. The Instagram page is Fika, F-I-K-A, .motionpictures. So give us a follow, come check it out. Our first release will be dropped in October. I'm not sure of a date yet, but it'll be dropped via Wages of Sin, which is another production company. It'll be part of their 31 Days of Horror leading up to Halloween. Oh. So stay tuned. Really excited for the launch of that. And then Fika will officially be launching with the drop of that short.
Fantastic. We'll make sure to get a follow on Instagram, and I, of course, will link to it in our show notes for tonight's program.
Perfect.
So
thank you.
People can click on that. Of course, you can also hit the rewind button, people. Just so you know, if you missed it, you can press rewind. It's right there. It's next to the play button. Just so you know. All right. Well, that's it for tonight's show. The next show is our first one that's going to be in October. So that's we're going to start doing October shows soon. And that'll be a lot of fun as we get ready. So I'm going to call it right off the bat. We wish you all a fun and safe Halloween. And enjoy your Halloween season. I know I went by Walmart last night and they had little ghosts up in the trees. And lots of signs of things that I should buy, which was very difficult for me. And I need to stay out of stores for approximately 2 months.
So, Target discount. That's where you need to go.
Oh, my God. No.
Their discount section.
I cannot do it. I cannot do it. Well, and we have, I don't know about you guys in the different cities you guys are at, but we always know Halloween is started when we go by State Fair Park. There is, it's either Halloween Express or Spirit Halloween. I can't remember which one. They put a huge tent that is shaped like a jack-o'-lantern that you can go into in the parking lot of State Fair Park. And you're like, oh, it's Halloween. And then every place that used to be like a Circuit City in town gets bought up. And they put up the temporary Spirit Halloween and Halloween Express stores. So we are 100% deployed in Milwaukee. What is the report in Pittsburgh, Mike?
So go here, Tim.
Okay. Danielle, out on the West Coast?
That's a go, but nothing in California super strikes, so.
Well, everybody's so chill out there. They don't take anything, so. Okay. All right. So until next time, everybody, hang in there, pumpkin, until our next show. And remember, as John Carpenter once said, horror is a reaction. It's not a genre.
Otherworldlyculture.com.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Red box, put it in your butt box. If you watch this, you need to fucking pull your eyeballs out with a spoon and kill yourself. As hard as my dick.